It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch.
All right, time to check in with the First Take fellas. We're also fired up. Yeah, I'm going to use it every once in a while. We had we got scolded yesterday by a listener who's like, stop with the fired up. We're excited to have one of the guys from the Insider Show over on Fox Sports Las Vegas, Ryan the Hockey Guy, RTHG, will be joining us in about 15 on a myriad of topics around the Golden Knights and the NHL. But we go back to the NBA on First Take. Let's listen to the intro of this news item around the New York Knicks.
It's no secret that Knicks fans and former Knicks fans like Max Kellerman want James Dolan gone. Well, yesterday, after ESPN and others reported that the New York Knicks plan to hire player agent Leon Rose as their new president, Knicks owner James Dolan released the following statement amidst their search for a new president of the Knicks. He said, "We are actively looking for a new president of the New York Knicks and hope to conclude the search as quickly as possible. I am not selling, but I am determined to find the right leader for the Knicks who will ensure the long-term success of the team, just as we did with the hiring of Rangers president John Davidson."
Oh, my God.
Max Kellerman with the "oh, my God." Candy is a Knicks fan. We'll let you listen to a little more of this as Max starts to go off.
He is an albatross. He's a weight around the neck of the NBA. Understand.
Wow.
And understand, New York is a market of 20 million. You know what the number one sport in this town is? By far, basketball. By far. The reason not everyone knows that all the time is because the Yankees are dominant, the Giants sometimes win the Super Bowl, and the Knicks always stink.
I actually agree with him. We both grew up in the area. The fervor for the Knicks, when they're at least respectable, if they're within, you know, hailing distance of the playoffs, it takes over that town. And what Dolan has done is to basically extinguish one of the great passions of the area because he's so freaking inept. Max then reacts to, did you notice the little shot in there, Dolan, about the have the Rangers won like seven cups that I haven't seen? That's the organization you point to? Like, look what we did with the Rangers. I mean, come on.
Just like we did with the Rangers. By the way, the Rangers are nothing to write home about, but they got one. So he's like, see how we had some success with the Rangers because I hired the right president. Jim Dolan, you've had decades now. You've had decades. Thank God for the Nets, because the Nets and KD and Kyrie are bringing excitement to this area. Now the Lakers and the Clippers are starting to have something in L.A. That's lifting the entire NBA. But Dolan has been awful for the NBA, almost anyone else, and the NBA would be a more popular league in this country.
Is that an arrogant New York take that the Knicks sucking has actually hurt the NBA? That the NBA would be even bigger if the Knicks were good?
The NBA is plenty big. LeBron James is a star. There are many other stars. Kevin Durant is in New York. He's just not in New York. He's in Brooklyn. So, no, don't tell me that the Knicks not being good is dragging the league down. David Stern made sure of that back in the 80s when this became a star-driven league. As the stars are good, the NBA is good. Don't tell me that if the Knicks were better, that all of a sudden the NBA would be better. We got past the idea of big markets ruling the roost a long time ago in this league. A very, very long time ago. Are you telling me that the Oklahoma City Thunder, when they had Harden and Durant and Westbrook, you're telling me that wasn't a success story for the league because it happened in Oklahoma City? No. The Knicks are awful. James Dolan has now had two decades of owning this team. And there is no hope. And I can live with the team being bad, Steve. We sit here and talk about the New York Giants all the time. And we talk about the fact that this team can't draft, that Dave Gettleman can't get it right. But you know what? Dave Gettleman, in his heart of hearts, is trying to do the right thing by this team. The reason that James Dolan said in that statement that I'm not selling the team is because in the Garden this year, he has been facing chance of sell the team over and over again. It is hostility. It is open hostility towards your fans. Can you imagine if Bill Foley walked down to center ice in the middle of a Knights game, in the middle of a losing streak, and took the mic and said, you know what? Live with it. My team, my rules. I don't care if you show up. If he started kicking fans out of his own building, if all of a sudden Marc-Andre Fleury played the Charles Oakley role and came back one day, and he was like, you know what? Marc-Andre Fleury's heckling me? Get out of the building and don't come back. It's the hostility toward the fans that you can't live with. It is why Max Kellerman got one thing right in all of this, calling himself a former Knicks fan.
He's done. He's given up. All right, we got a break. We will I had a debate issue that I could throw your way. Maybe we'll do that a little bit later on. But let's talk a little hockey on the way back as Ryan the Hockey Guy is up on Cofield & Company.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
It's been a long time since we've been home, but to finish off this way, you know, a big win. Obviously, pretty 2 points again, right? We're getting those until the end of the season. And, it's nice, good for everyone, right? Get some points, get some goals, and good for everybody's confidence.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. It's Cofield & Company.
Marc-Andre Fleury, excited to be home. I'm sure the whole team is excited to be back at the Fortress. 6 of 7 coming up here in Vegas. Ryan the Hockey Guy is in studio joining Cofield & Company to talk a little Knights as this big homestand begins. What's up, Ryan?
Not too much. Excited to be here. Thanks, guys.
Let's talk about where the Knights are right now under Pete DeBoer. Solid end to the road trip is the second part of the break there, or the time away from Vegas. They won 3 of 4. So what are you feeling right now about the Knights going into this essentially a long homestand?
Really right now with the Knights, I'm liking how consistent they've been from game to game. After the break, those four games that they have just played have been incredibly consistent. Now, you can look at the Tampa Bay game and say, well, they didn't execute, they didn't win that game. You're talking about consistency, they went 3 out of 4. But ideally, you look at that game, that's a game that probably was their best, most complete game, top to bottom 60 minutes. They were able to defend incredibly well. They just didn't bury their chances. So out of everything with Pete DeBoer, I think the consistency from game to game, effort to effort, shift to shift has been much better for this team, and I think that's the biggest change that I'm noticing in terms of where the Golden Knights are now as opposed to where they were under Gerard Gallant.
So, Ryan, when we look at where the team is right now, the defensive situation we know we've been talking about for a while is something that can be upgraded. We saw that ESPN ran an article today, 6 potential trades in the NHL, and one of them was to bring another body onto the blue line for the Golden Knights. What do you think of what's out there on the trade market? What do you think the Golden Knights could and should do?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of names that make a lot of sense. Sammy Vatanen out of New Jersey is one that I've thought about for a while. Shane Gostisbehere, which was linked in that ESPN article, is an interesting one. It's just he underwent arthroscopic knee surgery today. He's going to undergo it on Tuesday. So I think that one's kind of off the table. I didn't necessarily understand why they were proposing Braden McNabb in a trade for Gostisbehere. You need defensive help. It doesn't necessarily make sense to subtract on defense to bring in on defense. Sammy Vatanen's a name that I think makes a lot of sense for Vegas. Matt Dumba is I think out there, although I don't know if that's necessarily a fit. He would be the best available player that you could get if he's there, but I just don't know that the Golden Knights are going to be able to make it happen from a cap perspective.
Give me the guy Shane's last name again, because you said it's easy to pronounce.
Shane Gostisbehere.
Okay. Why can't that be Gostisbehere?
Because it's just not pronounced that way.
I know. It just sounds better, though.
Well, I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that he uses two emojis to use his name. It's Ghostbehere. So, you know, it is what it is. He'll fit in perfectly with the Golden Knights and all the emojis.
So I saw people on Twitter were throwing bigger names at Ryan. What's the problem there in terms of making that acquisition? At that point, I'm guessing that part of the core might have to be given up to get that big star defenseman.
Yeah, like when you look at a player like Matt Dumba, who has 3 more years on his contract after this season at $6 million per, you're going to need to subtract something. I mean, one of the easier contracts, I think, not necessarily in terms of moving, but one that's more palatable for other teams would be, say, like a Paul Stastny, just because there's not a lot of term on it. The cap hit's a bit high, but it would be able, you would have the room to bring in a guy like Dumba. That being said, I just don't know that the Golden Knights are going to move a piece like that, especially when you consider how well they've played with Stastny up there with Marchessault and Smith and how much balance they're going to have once William Karlsson and Cody Glass return. I think it's going to be something around the edges. I don't know that it's going to be anything that's going to really move the needle. I know that Alec Martinez's name has been thrown out there. I don't understand that simply because it's another left shot defenseman who's on the wrong side of 30. He can move pucks out of his own zone. Like, that's fine, but it's not the type of player that this team's going to need, I think, to make a deep run.
When are Glass and Karlsson actually coming back, and then what happens? How do you blend them in?
So Karlsson, it's really going to depend on when he skates. They have a morning skate tomorrow. If he's on the ice, I think we're talking maybe two or three games at the most until William Karlsson's back in the lineup. Cody Glass, I think, is a little bit further away. I would say probably more in the week-to-week category. And then as far as what you do, when Karlsson's ready, you put him where Chandler Stephenson is. William Karlsson can center a line with Pacioretty and Stone. You move Stephenson down, and then he can play on the third line with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuck. And then when Glass is back, I think you have to allow Cody Glass to play his natural position, put him at center, give him speedy wingers like Chandler Stephenson and Alex Tuck, and then you have the ability to have three lines that can come at you and score goals.
When we see Karlsson and Glass get back in, do you think that's the first time we're really going to see the full effect of what Pete DeBoer wants to do with this team? Or do you think that we've been able to glean from the last couple of weeks on both sides of the break here what changes might be in store for him?
Yeah, I think that's the first time that he's going to have the personnel to do what he wants to do. He's talked a lot about rolling lines, keeping shifts incredibly short, and trying to get your impact players on the ice as many times as possible throughout a 60-minute game. Right now, the Golden Knights have two really, really good lines. They've got a third line that's a bit of a mismatch, and then you've got your fourth line, which does their job. They're not going to score a ton of goals, but they're not going to get scored on when they're out there. When you have Glass and Karlsson back, all of a sudden you go from two lines that are really good to three lines that have incredible balance, and each one of them can put the puck in the back of the net. So you have to then force the opposition to match to you instead of you having to try to pick your spots and get your game breakers out there. Once those two guys are back, I think you're going to see a lot more high-tempo offense and a lot more opportunities for the Golden Knights to really, really run away with games.
He's at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter, 5 days a week over on Fox Sports Las Vegas at 3 o'clock, the VGK Insider Show, along with Frank Harnish. I saw some chatter on your Twitter account, seeing a lot of 75, trade 75. Could that actually happen, and how would other fans react if Reeves is on the move?
The only real reason that you throw Ryan Reeves out there is simply because of the money it would save you in terms of bringing a player in. You need to save a little bit of money on the cap to bring in a player. His cap hit would certainly fit that bill. Same with Cody Eakin. I don't think that Ryan Reeves is likely. You look at kind of what they're going to want out of that fourth line, especially when everyone's healthy. You're going to want a really solid, dependable center, and you're going to want another center iceman on the ice, like a Tomasz Nosek, to take faceoffs if you have situations where a center iceman gets kicked out. And then you've got one spot that's really going to go to either Will Carrier or Ryan Reeves. I just think with what Ryan Reeves has done here in Vegas, that's likely not going to be the guy that's on the move. But from a cap hit perspective, he makes significantly more than, say, a Will Carrier. It would be a move simply to bring in another player that I think can help this team move going forward. This organization has shown that public opinion doesn't necessarily matter in terms of making hockey moves to make this team as good as they can possibly be. Is it outside the realm of possibility? No, I don't think so.
5 points last night for Mark Stone. I mean, newsflash, Mark Stone is good. My question for you, Ryan, is you just talk about the Golden Knights organization does things the way that they want to do them, and sometimes that's against what we're used to and what popular opinion might be. I know they don't have a C on anyone's chest, but should it be on Mark Stone?
You know, I have gone back and forth on this. I've always liked the idea of Jonathan Marchessault as the captain of this team. I just think that he's one of those guys that backs up everything that he says on the ice. He's a spark plug. He's not afraid to go in there. Not the biggest guy in the world, but he will hit, he will do whatever he needs in order to win a game for his team. However, Mark Stone is clearly the most talented player up front for the Golden Knights. That's not up for debate, especially after the type of game that he had last night. That's not abnormal for Mark Stone. He's making those types of plays night in and night out. It's just sometimes they don't go in. You're passing to players, they're not hitting the net, they're hitting the post, hitting the crossbars, those types of things. I could see Mark Stone being the first captain of the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't see it happening this season. I think that you have a full summer for Pete DeBoer to really kind of assess that, but I'd be shocked if the Golden Knights do go with a captain next season, if it's anybody but Mark Stone.
So as we look forward toward next season, obviously we know what the big news of the week is when it comes to the franchise itself and the AHL coming to Las Vegas. What do you think it's going to mean for the minor league development for the Golden Knights system to have that franchise here?
Yeah, from a development standpoint, I think it's all going to pretty much be the same as it is with the Chicago Wolves. The Golden Knights are going to have their coaching staff, their systems being implemented at the same time. Really what I think it allows them to do is you don't have to have these situations where, say you have a home game and there's a late scratch or a late illness or something like that, it's a lot easier to call a guy up if he's down the street as opposed to halfway across the country. So for just ease of moving players back and forth between the AHL and the NHL, it's going to be a lot easier from that perspective. It's going to be easier to keep some eyes on them as well, just in terms of not having to travel, say, to Chicago to start checking out some guys, cluing in with their development. From just a development standpoint, I don't think anything really changes for the players outside of the fact that you have your team close and it's a lot easier to call guys up.
What's the name of the team going to be?
It's been reported, I believe, by Jesse Granger and Simbin.Vegas, Ken Bulkey, that the name is most likely going to be the Henderson Silver Knights. We'll see.
You don't sound like you like it.
I mean, it's just, it's a name. I don't really care. You can call him the Henderson anything. It doesn't really matter to me. I think it's still going to be fun. AHL is just a fun league. They do a lot of different promotions, a lot of different things that you don't necessarily get away with at the NHL level. So the name is what it is. It's Bill Foley wanting to continue with the theme of the Knights and all that, and that's fine. It doesn't matter what the name is. It's still going to be a fun time.
Tomorrow, Hurricanes, what time do you guys start with the pregame?
Game tomorrow is at 7, so pregame will be at 6:30 on Fox Sports.
And then next week, home Thursday, but on the road Tuesday. So you guys know where you're at. Where are you at next week on Tuesday so people can come out and watch a game with you?
We will be on location, I believe, at Twin Peaks. I haven't looked ahead. I know game days and non-game days, my friend.
We'll double check for you. Ryan, we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go. Ryan the Hockey Guy at Ryan Hockey Guy. Yeah, they're on the road for half the season, so sometimes you lose track of where you're at because they bounce around all over the place. Tony Miller's here from the Golden Nugget. We'll get into the important recap of what happened down here in the sportsbook for the Super Bowl and also just devastating news on TV. I mean, come on, Showtime. What are you doing?
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
It'll be a 2-1 to Altuve. Swung on and hit in the end of deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone to win the series.
It's Cofield and Company.
That's driven deep to left center field. Gardner is going back. Looking up. See you later.
How bad do you feel? How guilty do you feel, Tony Miller, boss of the book here at the Golden Nugget? Cheating Astros. Sing it.
Oh,
sing it. Crank it up. Hank Williams, give him some cheating heart. Your cheating heart. It hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Because I can tell you, hearing the home run calls hurts Candy and I, Yankees fans, especially since now we know that was Altuve hitting the bomb off of Aroldis Chapman. Now we know that as Altuve's up there, all of a sudden it's like, buzz, 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 buzz.
Stings a little.
Yeah, stings. Here's a slider. Just sit on it. He throws 100 miles an hour, but of course you know the slider's coming. Just happenstance. Or did he get the buzz, 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 buzz.
They didn't cheat last year. They were clear.
I'll tell you what. Candy, you saw him trotting around the bases running home, right?
I did, yeah.
He sure didn't want his jersey ripped off.
He was very clear about that.
Tony came home and he's like,
I know.
Don't rip the jersey off.
Said he was embarrassed. Didn't want to show his skin.
Yeah, exactly. And then we pointed out last week, Adam Hill did, because, you know, he looks at Instagram accounts all the time. He's like, Jose Altuve is shirtless on his Instagram account like 500 times because he's yoked up. He's, you know, he's a little muscle fiend.
No, it's embarrassing. No doubt about it. You know, and, hey, it sucks. It really sucks.
Astros fans are like, rough break. Tough call.
Astros.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Play for this year.
You guys will be fine.
I'm going to the Fires game. I'll be in Houston.
Okay. Do we want to get into this? Want to put him on the griddle? Is Mike Fires a bad guy?
Code of conduct. Yeah, you know. Just, it was bad. Yeah, but you don't blow the whistle.
Go ahead, Candy.
What? I'll let the witness have his entire time on the stand. Why don't you blow the whistle if you're Mike Fires?
You know how many teams out there are probably cheating that no one's blowing the whistle on? A lot of guys. A lot of cheating going on.
They did wrong by Fires in his mind, and that's the problem. When you leave it out there, you leave it hanging out there, you leave a guy like Mike Fires feeling scorned.
But why wait? Why not blow the whistle a lot sooner than he did?
I think that's the question that we don't know what went on behind the scenes. We don't know when he got upset about this, what he thought was going on with that team going forward, right? We said last year they were clean, or at least by the investigation, we don't know if it was as bad as it was in 17 and 18, but who knows? Who knows what could have happened behind the scenes? Who knows what could have happened to his friend on the team, to an agent, to the GM, to anybody? When you leave the loose ends hanging out there, if you're the Astros, something like this can happen.
I think a lot of questions are going to be answered by the Astros players in spring training. They have to come forward. They have to say something. They have to apologize. But
they're not going to.
They have to.
I think from the owner on down, they're not going to apologize. I really believe they're waiting for other teams to get caught for it to be announced. They're waiting for the Red Sox.
The report.
To get penalized when that investigation's over. And then the Astros can be like, see, we were one of a couple of teams. We don't have to be sorry. They're waiting for that. They're not going to say anything until that investigation is finished. You should be in a good mood this week. You know, it's funny, we talked to your buddy Jay Cornegay, and he was talking about how big the Super Bowl is for all of you guys in the book industry. Like, it can set you up for the rest of the year, good or bad. Nevada, the haul was massive, $154 million. The hold was, $18 million. It was over 12%. You guys did pretty well, right?
Yeah, we did. We did. And you're right, Steve. The first quarter between the Super Bowl and March Madness is where the sports books make their money for the whole year, basically. And the Super Bowl kicks it off. Now, I will say the props were not good. If it wasn't for the props, it would have been a real big monster.
Mahomes, first touchdown, that probably hurt a lot, right? Like 18 or 20 to 1?
Yeah.
Was there anything else that stuck out? You were like, oh, my God, this killed us.
The Mahomes first TD of the game.
Oh, that's what I meant, yeah. Mahomes first TD of the game.
Will Mahomes score a TD, and will it be the first TD of the game? It hurt.
Yeah.
That one hurt. The in-game wagering, where you could got the Chiefs at plus $4 on, and I couldn't get no Niner money. I was ahead of the market, and I still could not. I got two bets on the San Francisco 49ers in in-game running.
What was your split overall handle props versus the game?
I would say.
Are you over 50% on the props?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd probably play 60-40.
Okay. So how the state. Because you guys didn't hold as much as the state number, which was 12%. How did some books do so well? From, you know, because you guys all talk to each other, all the book directors.
And again, you know, it depends if you're talking about, you know, if you're throwing in the future numbers to that, which we did. And if you're just talking about the game and the end game, yeah, I mean, it could have been a lot worse, you know. But we did very well on the futures. We did a monster on the futures. And we did a lot, you know, the AFC-NFC prop all year we did very well with. And you know, and again, if it wasn't for the in-game and the props, it probably wouldn't have been one of the best of all time.
Tony, we see that Nevada did as well as it did, and some of the other states didn't. I mean, Jersey took a big loss.
Correct.
Pennsylvania took a big loss. What was the biggest difference there?
Yeah, like we have a property in Gold Nugget in Jersey, and we were talking during the day, and in Biloxi, and they just didn't do as well as us. Hard to figure out why. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know they took a lot of money up in Reno, you know, on the Niners and whatnot, and so – who knows what the answer is? But, yeah, they just – their handle was dwarfed us. They did a lot of money, but they didn't hold.
So one more thing on Jersey, because we had used – we were kind of speculating about the New Jersey loss. A lot of it was from the crazy promotions. They do, you know, nutty promotions just for player acquisition. For you guys, do you guys offer that stuff?
No.
In Jersey? So that wasn't part of the mix.
No, it wasn't part of
for you guys
mix
in terms
there
of a loss in New Jersey.
No, not at all.
What do you think about that? Like, I wonder, where's the industry right now in terms of offering, you know, massive bonuses just to get people in?
Well, you know, we here in Nevada, we just can't do it. You know, I mean, I wish we could, you know, but we're
you're not allowed to.
We're not allowed to.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just not allowed to do it. And if we could, the handle would be a lot different. And, you know, we have people flooding in all over.
Would you want to do it?
I would.
Yeah.
I would love to do it, kickbacks. But we cannot, and we probably never will.
Yeah, I saw that. I think one of the books in New Jersey also offered a refund on the Mahomes over-under for the rushing.
They did.
Which was crazy. Yeah. Was that what a nutty prop that was.
I'm just waiting for more props where they let us do the anthem and things like that. So, you know, that'll create more handle for us. Let's do some other things.
Tony, I'm curious. We see that now in Jersey, DraftKings, of course, it's Johnny Velo, is booking the Oscars. Would you have interest in ever doing anything like that?
Love to. Yeah, presidential election, the Oscars.
Ugh.
The next Pope. And then there's so many things out there you can do. I remember being in England. I booked so many things. I was astounded what I could book over there that I can't here in the States. But, you know, there's so many things that we can create a lot of handle on and just do.
Do you guys know, has anyone announced the presidential election in terms of they're going to put it on the board or not, if I can speak English?
More than likely nowhere in the States.
Why not?
Yeah. You'd have to get regulators to agree to it, and I think there's a pretty decent fear of manipulation.
So even in New Jersey, they're even
in your home state, that might be a bridge too far.
They've been aggressive. They've been aggressive. I mean, it's an amazing amount of money you could bring in. NBA, was there anything super impactful at the trade deadline?
No, not for us. We kept taking them down, putting them up, taking them down, putting them up. And, you know, it was a crazy 2 days, but nothing serious came in.
The Sharps have not been on, say, Miami in the East?
No, I was ahead of the market a little bit, you know, and, you know, I kept dropping them, figuring, you know, the trade was going to be made, and it finally did. Surprised the Lakers didn't do nothing. You know, I thought for sure they would, but, you know, we get a lot of Laker money here downtown, but nothing came in.
On property here at the Golden Nugget, we're talking to Tony Miller. The grotto's open, moved to the back of the property. Sweet. It's a little bit smaller, but that bar is fantastic, and then you got the big brick oven right there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Real cool.
Saltgrass is going to open when?
Putting
you on the spot.
Good question. It's going to be soon.
Okay.
I don't know exact date, but it's coming real soon. They're marching along, man.
Awesome.
Thanks for that.
I know. TV Tony time. One, I have to admit, I'm an idiot. I was texting back and forth with you about that outsider, and I think I asked you about, well, hey, what'd you think of the end? I got home yesterday, and the SO's like, hey, let's watch the outsider. And I'm like, yeah, I'm done. It's done. I thought it was done after four episodes. I didn't look on the scroll. It's still going.
Yeah.
Like, because of the...
Well, no wonder you didn't understand.
Yeah, I was like, this is a weird ending, but I guess I'll just deal with it. Should I ruin it for people? I'll just say I'm not going to ruin it. One of the PIs drops into the tub, and then the screen goes black, and I'm like, well, I guess we know what it was.
Go with those.
I was like, well, that was a little underwhelming, but, you know, pretty good overall. And then all of a sudden she's like, yeah, there's six more episodes.
When you told me you didn't understand, I was going to try to explain it to you, but I said, I better not, because I might be ahead of him. So.
Yeah, I'm going to ruin the rest of it for him. And I'm like, I thought it was done after four episodes. I'm an idiot. Now this one, this is earth-shattering. What is Showtime doing? They canceled Ray Donovan, that's it?
I don't understand, Steve. I don't understand. They left so many loose ends wide open. And the show's fantastic, and it's just heartbroken. I'm stunned.
Yeah. Ryan McKinnell has now gone on this. He's been on the warpath for, like, the last year. He's very anti-series on whatever, Showtime, HBO, Netflix, because of this. Because at any point, they could pull the plug. He's like, movies, they don't pull the plug. The movie ends, that's the end. I mean, I guess I get his point.
I do. Look at Watchmen. They're not coming back for season two?
Wait, what?
Watchmen.
Wait, you're breaking that to me on the air?
You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea. Is that right? What the hell's going on? Why would they not bring it back? It was great.
One season, done.
This is unbelievable.
I quit.
I don't even know what to say. Well, you're not going to quit. I mean, we're both TV junkies. And
I can't help. I can't keep starting these shows and not getting no endings.
It's an emotional rush. Just killing you. Oh, no. All right, well, I got to find more shows on the rotation.
Oh, yeah, buddy. I just watched season 3 of Stranger Things. Just finished.
Wait a second. That's out, too?
I'll stop.
I'm kidding.
You're killing me.
By the way, do you favor full season out at one time or week to week?
Oh, I binge. I binged. Hmm. Van the High Castle. Look at that. I binged that. It took me 3 days.
I like week to week.
Do you?
Yeah.
I can't do that. I can't. That's why it's there.
Well, it's not healthy for us to sit there and watch, you know, freaking 12 hours of TV and back-to-back days.
Well, you sound like my mother used to talk to.
All right. Well, looking out for you. You should be looking out for me, too.
I mean, I am.
Look at this. This is a mess right here. Just this whole visual thing here. It's
yeah, you're right. You thought it was over after 4 episodes.
I did. All right. Well, we got NBA the rest of the way. That'll be interesting from a betting standpoint. Last one. Are you booking XFL? Does anyone care?
I haven't had one bet on it yet. Yes, really? We are booking it. We will book it every week. And, yeah, it's a big weekend, man. XFL's starting. NASCAR's back Sunday. Was it Sunday? Yeah. With the Clash. And
any action on UFC? Or because it's out of town, not so much?
Well, it's in Houston, so we get our Houston clientele betting it. Yeah, we've had a little bit of action on it.
Tough main event because Jon Jones is minus 475. So.
Exactly. It's all dog money anyway we get here. So, yeah, it's... It'd be a nice little event for us this weekend.
All right, Tony. Good job.
Thanks, brother.
There you go. Tony Miller at the Golden Nugget. Go check out the sports book. Check out all the new restaurants down here at the property, Golden Nugget on Fremont. RJ Bell's going to check in as we'll find out if RJ is interested in the XFL.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here at Golden Nugget on a Friday. RJ Bell is with us. RJ, how'd you do on the Super Bowl?
Oh, it was a dream, baby. It was a dream. Everything except the purple Gatorade came in.
Yeah. Adam Hill's not here to brag. I did well. And we basically, I mean, we took your advice. And that is try to play, not necessarily against the public, but a lot of unders. Bet on a less than, you know, stellar offensive game, and you may make out like bandits.
Especially early.
Yep.
Right? Is we've seen that first quarter now, year after year, that the teams are just nervous. They don't want to lose a game in the first quarter, that Super Bowl game. And even Belichick's been like that, even as much, if not more, than anyone. And this is one to put in your pocket for next year. First score, field goal,
yep.
4 out of 5 years now. It's either been a field goal or safety, which they bundle together. And the odds are like plus 160.
Yep, I did Niner first score, touchdown or field goal. I took field goal and got it.
Yeah, well, that's a nice one. So, and to me, it really, the handicap made sense, and we saw it. They might have went for that in the regular season, right?
Yep.
But in the Super Bowl, they don't want to go for it like that. Now, once the game in the second half, in a way, as much as I don't like Philadelphia, I think the Eagles were lucky to win that Super Bowl, and I think that it's Peterman, right? I always miss his name. Peterson.
You don't want to do the Peterman project. That's the quarterback who had the 19 interceptions in one quarter.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, we met. Yeah,
Doug Peterson.
And the Eagles coach's last name?
Doug Peterson.
Peterson, there it is. Yeah. Okay. Is Peterson, I think, really so benefited from having Frank Reich and, you know, whatever else we can talk about. But let's give him credit. The guts he had saying, we got to roll – you know, three or four straight times to beat this team. And the only way you roll seven, three or four straight times is if you roll the dice.
Right.
And he did, and it took every one of those, you know, Philly special whatever to win that game. So give him credit for that. But most coaches don't have the guts to do that in the Super Bowl.
Talk about what you saw, what you did, how it turned out for you on the Pat Mahomes rushing prop.
Oh.
What a freaking disaster.
I mean, Steve, you know, I mean, we've known each other over 10 years. I think it's fair to say we're two of the more selfish people walking the planet.
Yes, yes.
I mean, and again, I call it self-interest,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And finally, I found the point where I started feeling sympathy. Because usually when I win a bet, because I shop for the number hard and the other people lose, most other people, I sit and think, see, that's what I'm talking about. How do you like me now? You know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it affirms you because you're putting in all the, you know, all the work. Well, this one was Fez's work, right? He's got 29 outs. He got over 28.5 for me as I like that, you know, Mahomes over. 44 yards with a minute left. And how many kneel downs have you – you've seen probably, what, 300 kneel downs at the end of games in your life?
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen more than 10 yards lost in the kneel downs. So it would have went to 44 to 34. Somehow, some way, it's 7 yards, 5 yards.
Yep.
And it got to 29, and on fourth down, they're going for it. It's like, oh, my God, this is it. And they threw that, you know, ball in the air, over 28.5 wins. I was happy, but literally I found my breaking point of sympathy. I felt bad.
Yeah, I bet it day of.
I still cashed the ticket.
Yeah, of course. So did I. I bet it day of. I think it was on over under 34.5, and I had the under.
Oh my gosh!
I benefited
one
greatly.
Of the luckiest wins in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I tweeted out once it got to whatever it was, like 42, 43. I'm like, well, that's a loss. John Von Tobel was all over the over, and I'm like, yeah, you won. And then next thing I know, I'll admit too, I wasn't in a normal state of concentration. We'll just say that on Super Bowl Sunday at the end of the game. So I had no idea I'd won the bet. I wasn't even watching real closely all the freaking kneel downs, and I'm like, okay, I got it.
Now,
I guess I was right.
Bruise or type 2 diabetes?
Could have been a lot of things.
I mean, there's a combination.
I may have overloaded on shrimp to the point, as you have pointed out, the obnoxious bowl scouts. They have shrimp in their pockets.
Free shrimp?
Yeah, it was free shrimp. Yeah, it was a nice party I was at, and the shrimp was a flowing.
And you ate. Let's just say this: if you had to pay for that shrimp, you would have never ate that much shrimp.
No way.
You know what's funny? I mean, it's fair to say. I mean, you know, people realize you're not poor, right? I mean, you're the leading, in my opinion, the leading voice in sports in Vegas, and I don't even think it's a debate.
Yeah, but I'm a man of the streets, and I give most of my.
You agree with that?
Yes, but I'm a man of the streets, and I also give away most of my salary to charity.
No, that's untrue. So what I'm saying is, you could go eat shrimp every night,
of course,
and be fine, correct?
Yes. But when it's free.
That's the sick part is what I'm trying to get at. Why? It's like you could have $40 drop out of your pocket. You wouldn't even know it. But somehow spending $40 on a trip, you would never do it. When it's free, though, you eat so much you're sick.
Pretty much. And I still haven't learned my lesson. I get mocked on at home as the child of the Depression because anytime I get free food, I always take it as leftovers. And there's leftovers all the time in my refrigerator. If it's 14 days old, then I'll still eat it.
I love leftovers. And it's not because it's free that's nice. It's because you don't have to worry about that meal. There's nothing better than waking up and realizing you've got like a leftover Chinese that you like, maybe even with shrimp, and saying, I got lunch covered. That's the niceness of it.
RJ Bell's with us at RJ in Vegas, straight out of Vegas, 5 days a week on Fox Sports Radio. You can hear the show locally here on 920 The Game at 3 o'clock. Was there any real impact that you guys talked about the last 2 days with the NBA trade deadline in terms of numbers?
I think there's a real opportunity with the Rockets. Not to win the title so much, though they actually are the fourth favorite. But I think that, you know, this is the analogy I gave on the show today. If you and I are playing pool, and odds are I'm like one of these 1 in 100 pool shooters. I'm not 1 in 10,000. But I'm a very good pool shooter, but I could not make a living at it. Odds are I'm better than you, though I don't know. Would you think?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you and I are shooting pool and betting 100 a game every Monday night, a best of three, and I'm winning 80% of the nights, I want nothing more than you to do nothing different. I want you to do more of the same, baby. If you come in with a different cue, you come in with a coach, a leather black glove.
I'm going lefty. I'm going lefty against you.
Rocky and Rocky II style to protect the eye. Exactly. I don't want that. To me, the Rockets weren't going to win it with Capella. Now you got a brilliant football or basketball mind in Daryl Morey doing something different. To me, that's scary if you're the rest of the West because they could be worse. But their ceiling just got higher, I think, the Rockets. By the way, 5 games this year without Capella. Last night and 4 others, they've covered by 14 points a game, 5-0 straight against the spread.
You and I argued last year about a lot in the Eastern Conference about the Celtics and the Sixers. Now, the Bucks may make both teams irrelevant, but where are you right now with the Celtics and the Sixers and now the Heat, who have added some important pieces, I thought?
Well, right now, if you had to take two of the three, if I said NBA title, you can pick two of the three, and if either of those teams win and I give you $10,000, who do you take amongst the Sixers, the Celtics, and the Heat? Who's the worst of those is another way to say it.
I would take the Celtics and the Heat.
Okay, so you think the Sixers have the least chance at a title?
Yes.
Now, it's interesting. If the bet were over-under wins the rest of the regular season, I would certainly take the Sixers last. To win the title, you got to ask yourself who has the highest ceiling. Don't the Sixers have the highest ceiling? Because of if they somehow Embiid, you know, against all odds, and Simmons start really playing well together, they are the best team, right?
I'm still not on the Sixers train. Because going back to
I'm
what
not either. I'm just saying at least they have a ceiling. You could say.
But and I like the Celtics because the Celtics are they've gotten it. They're down with small ball.
Yeah, and to me, this is the debate that the conversation I like to have, and let's use it for the Jets. Is if you could have one of the following in the next 10 years, one Super Bowl, 9 missed playoffs, Super Bowl victory,
yeah,
or 8 playoffs, 1 Super Bowl loss, and a mix otherwise, meaning, you know, conference final, whatever. What do you take?
You know, it's kind of sick. I would actually take the consistent winning over the one-time thing, but I'm probably in the minority.
And to me, I think I would take the title.
Yeah.
Because as a real fan of the Steelers, I like when they miss the playoffs. Like, the most painful game for me for the Steelers, the two most painful ever, were the two Super Bowl losses. I mean, against the Cowboys, that was horrible. And then when Mendenhall fumbled, when they were coming back, I really was depressed for like 3 weeks. Mm. You know, so to me, I don't like getting that far and losing. But this all comes back to the Rockets. I think if you're looking to be competent, looking to be 55-60% winners, I think that the way Daryl Morey did it wasn't good. But if you're looking to max your chance at winning it, I think that's what the Rockets did here. And I think it's going to be fascinating to look at how the teams they play each night, how they do against small ball. I think there's going to be handicapping opportunities. If you find teams that are really bad against small ball, the Rockets are going to be obviously a great matchup against them, and I don't think the market is going to really account for that.
By the way, in the East, keep an eye on the Pacers. Oladipo's back. My boy Sabonis is a double-double machine, sometimes a triple-double machine. They're a sleeper.
You know, that's interesting. But a sleeper for what? The conference finals, right?
I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, they don't win it.
I don't think, but I think they're going to give someone a lot of trouble along the way. Some of these teams that expect to go to the semis or the finals.
This feels like our old show, Steve. More of a conversation.
I know. And then you would rip me to shreds in the end and just say, hey, the best players always make the finals. And
well, in the NBA, that's true.
Yeah, most of the times you're right. RJ, have a wonderful weekend and you know, go grab some shrimp. Put some in your pocket.
But I'll pay for it.
Yes, I know you will.
Begrudgingly.
Yes.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm looking for freebies all weekend long. There you go. RJ Bell, pregame.com, at RJ in Vegas, up on Twitter. Good 5 o'clock hour on the way. We will get into the XFL. We will be excited about the XFL, or else.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.